This is The Financial Coconut, Singapore's first personal finance podcast network. And I'm Timothy Mazier, Editor-in-Chief of Blockhead. Join me and the crew on our weekly Friday segment as we filter out the noise in the crypto space and keep you updated on the ideas that actually matter. This is Blockcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to another episode of Blockcast. I'm your host, Reggie, aka your Chief Financial Coconut.
Hi, and I'm Mark, CEO and founder of Blockhead.
And this is Timothy Mazier, Managing Editor at Blockhead. How's it going?
Okay, finally we are back.
Finally.
It's only been a week, but you've been gone for a while.
I've been gone for 2 weeks, right? Because I needed a break, guys. I mean, we did so much during the budget. I cannot, really. So, 3 big stories every week. Today, who wants to roll? Who is starting our first story today?
I'll take the first story.
Okay.
You know, this is something that we've been wanting to talk about. And also, one of your followers on Telegram also raised this topic. He's like, I think someone was asking a couple of days ago for us to talk about Silvergate.
Great. Thanks for responding to community needs. Oh, right?
We have heard your feedback and we have answered.
Very good. That's the basis of building a great show, right? Listen to the people, please.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like this is the crypto industry's next big blow up. So, you know, after like 2 months of like a relative holiday from bad news, things seem a bit more normal now, with more blowups and crisis in store. Okay, Silvergate, you know, basically it's a crypto-friendly bank. It operated an exchange network that allowed its clients to send USD and euros at all times, 24-hour payments network, and then they have been supporting crypto exchanges and related businesses, which traditionally have found it hard to access the banking system. But Silvergate is one of several banks that service such clients. They are also one of the biggest, but you know, it looks like it's the end of Silvergate. Yeah, you know,
It's all over the news. Yeah. Everybody is covering, say it is dead. It is shut operations and all that shit.
Well, look, like the interesting thing about this particular bank is that, you know, it's also listed in the stock exchange. You can buy it, right? So at one point, personally, like I held Silvergate stock in the same way that, you know, like I thought buying Coinbase was a good idea. It's a similar theme here, like, you know what I mean?
I'm sorry for laughing, but I cannot. Yeah. Please continue.
No, it's okay. I mean, like, you know, I can, you know, people can learn from my mistakes.
We all learn, you know.
If you have deposited money in exchange before, like an overseas exchange, like, you know, like with a name like, say, FTX, another mistake, right? You would definitely have used Silvergate. Okay, like, you know, when you think about the transfer that you have to do from your bank account to like an exchange like FTX, right? The depositing of the receiving party on the other end is Silvergate Bank. So that really is the connection. And then that's why I thought it was a good idea, because I went, hey, most of the crypto exchanges I know use Silvergate. This should be a good investment. Yeah.
And then voila.
And then, you know, the rest, as they say, is history.
But what exactly happened, Tim? Like why the situation? Like, I mean, it's all over the news now. It has collapsed, blah, blah, blah. But what happened?
I think it started like a while back. They received some heat from regulators in the US. And also there was a criminal, I think it's still ongoing, criminal investigation by the Justice Department's fraud unit into Silvergate's dealings with FTX and Alameda. And then I think things came to a head like several weeks ago when Silvergate didn't file its annual report and said that it may be less than well capitalized and that it's reevaluating its business. Soon after, it shut down its Silvergate exchange network. which is the its payments network. And then, you know, crypto players that use the bank like Coinbase, Circle, Paxos, Wintermute, Gemini, you know, all the big players, all their clients, they exited their partnerships or reduced their exposure to this banker. Well, yesterday, Bloomberg reported that it plans to wind down operations and liquidate the bank. Apparently, it's the first bank failure in the US since 2020.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small bank, honestly. I mean, you know.
I mean, they literally had a bank run, right?
Yeah.
If you think about it, yeah. They literally had a bank run.
The headline for this one shouldn't be Silvergate in crisis. It's more like Silvergate has collapsed. Like full stop. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I prepared the notes before yesterday.
I don't think anybody will go in anymore. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, then what are the impacts? And I mean, when you think about it, it's essentially a bank run. People pull money out, and if all these big boys pull the money out, then it's okay, right? In that sense, like it's not the contagion. In fact, it's not going to be that crazy, right?
I mean, so far we've seen like crypto related stocks haven't taken a hit. Like, you know, Bitcoin miners, they've fallen, you know, between like 2 to 10% in the past few days. MicroStrategy as well, I think it's like 4%. Coinbase also, after getting a bit of a pickup in recent months, it's been slipping a little. And
wait, but is there actually any impact on these companies? Like let's say Silvergate collapses. How is it going to impact these other companies? Do you have any thoughts around this? Or is it just like, oh, everybody's scared, so all the crypto stuff, drop?
I think it's very different here in the sense that, you know, when the major exchanges like Coinbase, they've already moved, you know, the money out of Silvergate and are now like, you know, doing business with like, you know, other banks. I think one thing here is that, you know, when you have like a financial institution like Silvergate or a bank that's over-reliant on cryptocurrencies, right, this is what happens. Because in most cases, you know, when you look at, say, banks, you know, this particular asset class, right, it, you know, it's just one part of like, you know, like a bigger portfolio of products and services that they provide. But, you know, in this case, Silvergate, you know, they made their name, the entire business was really built around cryptocurrencies. So it's really, it was really an all-in strategy for them. In the kind of contagion that I think could happen, I'll put the risk as to quite minimal because it is a regulated financial institution in the US, right? Actually, if I'm not wrong, they might be incorporated in the Bahamas. I'll go and check again.
But anyway, regulation, not very comforting these days anyway. But yeah, please.
Yeah, but I mean, in this case, you know, it's not going to be an FTX situation where like, you know, they took kind of like, you know, like a commingled customer, like deposits into one account, right? Like Silvergate would have had to kind of keep their customer funds separate.
Yes.
Right. So I think on this point, this is not like another FTX blow up. So, you know, we're not going to see another huge fallout because of this implosion. Right, it is just the latest in a long line of like casualties.
It's like a tremor, it's a tremor. It's a tremor, right? Essentially because of the big collapse.
You say they are a small bank, but they're one of the biggest in the crypto space.
They're one of the biggest in the crypto space, but I mean small in terms of like when you compare it with like your more traditional names.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, of course.
In terms of market cap.
But it's a different discussion, yes.
I mean, dude, guys, at one point, like, you know, like Silvergate stock rocketed by 300%, man. This was like during the bull run. Yeah.
Everything went up that kind of crazy numbers, bro. But anyway.
I mean, Blockhead has did a story earlier this week that we spoke to some asset managers who dealt in digital assets on what they're doing. So, they said they're all taking their funds out of Silvergate and they're struggling to find new banking partners and they're looking to Swiss banks. That's what they said.
Mm-hmm.
Signum, Seba, and then, you know, some other smaller banks in the Bahamas. These are banks known for their crypto-centric strategies. So, financial institutions that deal with digital assets, they are looking for new banking partners. And, you know, I guess the Swiss banks are going to benefit from this shift.
Yeah, fair. I mean, it is what it is, right? It's like how people move money out of Hong Kong, then they all end up in Singapore. But anyway, that's a different discussion, you know. But I'm more interested, like, why are all these things coming down? Like, you know, like, because it doesn't look like there's any serious contagion risk, you know. So why are all the different things falling? Probably a sentiment driven, doesn't sound like a fundamental problem, you know. With all these different other other verticals, lah, right? But it's always great to kind of check back on your companies. Maybe there are the few companies that haven't pulled out Silvergate, right? Then you can slap them, fire the management, right? But we will see. We will see.
Yeah, but you're right. I don't know for sure exactly, you know, whether there's any real mismanagement here, lah. You know, is that Tim?
I don't think so. And this is, at least to me, you know, okay, this creates like more uncertainty and fear around the crypto space, but this is a banking industry problem. It's the crypto companies, crypto exchanges, and all these guys, they are the ones that are being careful now, and that's why they're taking their money out in advance. So you could see it as the crypto industry is proactively risk managing after all the lessons in the past year.
I mean, they were getting investigated by the SEC, you know, during the whole FTX crisis.
Which I guess real life
leads us to our next story.
Great, go for it. Wow, beautiful tangent, go for it.
Oh, thanks, man. So for the next story, we have the SEC effectively, I guess you could say that they got bitch slapped, lah. Not bitch slapped. Well, I mean, okay, so the story here was that Binance was trying to acquire Voyager Digital's assets. And we all know that Voyager Digital right now is bankrupt, right? So, whatever that's left, Binance is trying to acquire it. And the SEC essentially tried to block the deal, okay? And then a core part of this was the VGX token and a big debate over whether that was a security or not. And then in bankruptcy court, you know, a US judge approved the deal. Yeah. And I think that, you know, like in the written judgment, or rather, you know, a statement, he did say that he was absolutely shocked at the SEC for interfering without giving guidance on how to address, you know, like, yeah, the concerns. So I think the you know, in summary here, Binance trying to do Binance, acquire Voyager Digital. I think that for about $100 million US, if I'm not wrong, that's what the assets were worth at that point in time. And then this sale was being blocked by the SEC. And then that has been, you know, approved in bankruptcy court.
Interesting, interesting.
But I mean, the SEC's arguments against the acquisition was what? Like, you know, that Binance will get customer data, social security numbers, and like this could be shared with their, I don't know, and what? And their offshore databases and things like that, right?
I mean, it seems like a really weak point here. I mean, that happens literally in every case or in every kind of like transaction or M&A deal, right? Like, you know, like with like a, you know, a business that kind of transacts with like customers, right? And this is always the case, right?
But, you know, at the same time, you know, as this was developing, there was also stories that revealed that Binance executives tried to avoid US regulatory scrutiny with their Binance US operations, right?
Oh, what happened? What happened? Juicy.
No, I mean, Binance just like they did in Singapore as well. You know, they established a local unit to service domestic customers, which shields their wider global business from regulatory eyes. So, you know, the reports were of Telegram messages between the Binance executives. So basically,
I love how Telegram messages are reported.
Guys, it is Telegram messages. So like really, like, you know, I think the amount of credibility that we need to.
Yeah, Twitter, Telegram messages. Wow, lovely.
But a well-trodden approach here where like the business would set up localized entities, right? And the idea of like, I would say, adding some layers between the localized chapters of the business versus like, you know, like the main global business. As to whether, like, you know, how and why they were trying to avoid U.S. scrutiny, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, you know, this is what has been alleged. And I mean, it's not surprising here. I think that this situation can be broken down into two different, you know, like questions or narratives. Like, number one, you know, post-FTX, right? Is the SEC getting too aggressive? Are they investigating or probing too much into the industry such that, you know, like, you know, it right now it's kind of interfering with like transactions, you know, such as this, right? And then second of all, conversely, right, you know, like, is Binance, you know, becoming too powerful? Yeah. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think Binance is becoming very powerful. I mean, it's not a Binance-only situation. It's with any other sectorial collapse, right? When a sector collapses and then there are one or two big boys that stay around, they will scoop up everyone. It's like Big Four, right? It used to be Big Eight, then Big Six, and Big Four, you know, nice. in the accounting, right? So, I mean, same with legal, same with a lot of other sectors. Doesn't mean I support it, but it's a natural trajectory of how, like, essentially capitalism compounds, like, the bigger guys that stay around, they eat up, right? Uber and Grab eat up, right? And together with TT's unit, right? So there's a lot of all these consolidation and when you have a big boy that has been consolidating, that's consolidating around, then they become very powerful. They set the stage for everything, right? And it's it can be problematic, especially when the whole idea of crypto is trying to be decentralized and all that. Yeah.
But I agree with you on that front. But I also do feel that in this case, the SEC is overstepping. Because, I mean, this particular situation, you know, it's an M&A deal. I don't see how this transaction has any bearing on, like, you know, what they need to fix in terms of, like, the regulatory aspect of, you know, the industry in general, right? This feels more to me like, you know, a matter for, like, an antitrust kind of court. You know, if it was, like, monopolistic behavior that is anti-competitive, fine. I think I can see the argument here. But, I mean, I'm not sure how this relates back to what happened with FTX and, like, you know, like, the problems that, or rather, the kind of situations that we need clarity on.
That's a fair point. Maybe it's a different group of people that should be prosecuting these guys, right?
Maybe. You know, maybe.
But, yeah, I think the bigger problem is really the monopolistic behavior. So, like you said, like, you have to bring essentially the FTX problem, right? Because on some level, these Binance guys ignited the FTX crisis, right? It's not that there wasn't a matchbox there. There was a matchbox there. There were a lot of problems there, you know. But these guys did a big bang run and then essentially like told the whole world, right? These guys are assholes, right? And then the whole thing collapsed. Right? And I'm not protecting FTX, right? They got to get their own shit done and they got their own problems internally. But you cannot deny that on some level, this CZ guy with the Binance guys, he ignited the whole shit. Yes. Right? So I can understand if there's a story here that suggests that this thing is a, you know, a monopolistic move, lah.
No, definitely. But both sides have to also test the boundaries a little and see, you know, how far they can, you know, push, right? So yeah, SEC will flex a little, so will Binance, and now they know where the equilibrium lies.
Yeah, sleazy CZ.
Interesting. Okay,
but
okay,
yeah, fine. I mean, Binance remains a top dog, and now the SEC has effectively lost.
But but is it changing the landscape? Do you feel like with Binance being now the top dog? I mean, it's been a few months, right? Do you feel any big changes?
I think it's too early to say, lah. We'll just have to see how this.
Still got tremors. Silvergate just died, lah. So,
I mean, look. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, what Binance was doing with, like, you know, the BUSD and BNB is on a similar level to what happened with FTT, like, you know, the FTX's token, utility token. But a part of this narrative also, I do question whether, you know, what we're seeing right now, these monopolistic practices, right, by Binance. Yes, it is a natural part of, like, capitalism. But there's a part of me that also thinks that, you know, they might not have a choice. You know,
like, wow.
What if,
wow, Mark, coming in with the conscious, the high level moralistic. No, like, they don't have a choice. Like, they have to do it.
No, I'm not even talking about that, man. I'm talking about, like, what if, like, you know, like, I mean, they're still a private company. They've come out to kind of like said that, you know, they are very well collateralized. They have enough reserves, et cetera. But we've seen that story before, right? And so it felt to me at one point when this whole thing was unfolding, right, it was kind of a winner-takes-all approach, right? If at this point Binance is able to grow big enough such that it has its tentacles or webs everywhere, right, then it almost becomes too big to fail already at that point. So if something were to happen down the road, like another bank run or some sort of crisis, right, you know, at which point then it is likely that, you know, like some sort of white knight or like, you know, like that there is... It is more likely that the regulators will have no choice but to really work hand in hand with them.
I
think that is.
I know what you're saying. I know
the
what
longer
you're saying.
Term view here about, you know, like why they are doing what they are doing, right? Like why cough up $1 billion as a crypto recovery fund? You know, buying shit up that, like, you know, like frankly speaking, you don't really need like these some of these things as part of the core business. Well, you know, So I think that the goal here is that, you know, to become too big to actually fail, and that insulates it, kind of washes away whatever sins that, like, you know, like might have happened in the past. It's the same thing that we see. It's the same thing that we see with, like, you know, like the banking crisis and the big banks. Man, they really, like, you know, these close guys were like, you know, true criminals, right? But it's just too big to fail at that point. Yeah.
Interesting. Right? Interesting.
Yeah. The reason why, you know, like, you know, they could let FTX fail is because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if that thing goes down, we're still trading crypto, right?
If you bring it back down to like other smaller spaces, whether is it like, you know, on demand, like Grab and Uber, or is it like e-commerce? You know, it's also the same situation.
Yes,
right?
They were all
bleeding money like mad. They were bleeding until the last person stopped bleeding, right? So
yes.
It can be a situation. Yeah, maybe a probe will show you that inside also very jumbo one, very messy. Yeah. Right, so there's a chance.
One way that you could characterize what CZ did, you know, like I would say 6 months ago with where he essentially, you know, started the bank run, right? Yes, a part of it was greed, but I also think that a part of it, you know, was probably survival. They probably needed to do it, in my opinion.
Fair. And that will be an investigative journalist piece, right? So I'll wait for
guys,
you to give
hot
me
takes,
some
guys, hot takes.
Hot takes, hot takes. I want some Telegram messages. VPN, okay? Be creative, huh?
Yeah. But you should also point out, right, that this Voyager deal was approved by 97% of its creditors because they would be getting back about a 73% recovery on their assets.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's that. It's not like Binance is just doing what they want.
Yeah. I mean, fair, right? Fair.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, cool. Interesting. I love the story we've painted. Yeah, and then this brings me to the third story for the day, right? Which really brings back down to this whole like innovation, creative, you know, and all that jazz, right? So the third story for today is that AI isn't that useful for blockchain. Okay, the idea here is, of course, now ChatGPT is all the rage, right? Wait, just for clarity's sake, are you using ChatGPT to write your stuff?
Oh, all the time, man. All the time. Last game.
Yeah. Okay, can unfollow already. Don't need to re-block here. Right, but it is all the rage, you know. The politicians are talking about it. They're joking about it. I don't understand why these uncles find it funny, you know, like in the parliament. Then they say like, oh yeah, I hope y'all never use ChatGPT, write your speech. Like, wake up lah. Okay, but anyway, right? So some people are saying that ChatGPT is all the rage, but not actually Web3 ready, right? So people like Phantom founder and DeFi architect Andre, what is this guy's name? Crunch.
Yeah, we were also trying to figure out how to pronounce his name.
Crunch. Okay, anyway, he can butcher Asian name, I can butcher his name. So Andre Crunch has warned that the blockchain industry should not be too excited about AI, right? Why, right? Because he said that AI is not ready to be integrated with blockchain technology in its current form, despite OpenAI's ChatGPT leading to an increase in AI-related cryptocurrencies project. Right? So essentially, it's a hype-driven kind of shit, you know, where there's this new exciting thing, everybody is going for it. So, you know, some of these like crypto big boys, or at least some of the remaining seniors left in the space, you know, and all of them are saying, don't be too excited about this whole AI thing because, man, it is not aligned with what blockchain wants to do. And, you know, AI is essentially still fuzzier and in its early days, law. So what do you guys think?
So the backdrop, right, is that all the VC money that was flowing into the crypto space is now being redirected to AI-related projects. Yeah. So, I mean, what is the crypto industry left to do with when all the money is going away? They have to say that they are AI integrated as well, right? So they can, yeah.
This is like, you know, asking Bill Gates and Elon Musk to be like, you know, like friends, you know. I mean, you have, you know, blockchain has been, Web3 has been touted as like, okay, this is going to change the way that we live, right? And then all of a sudden you have, you know, ChatGPT has been on trend for the past like 2 or 3 months, you know. So it is about whether the seeding, like, you know, like what is the most innovative tech at this point in time, right? Like what is the, so that media narrative, right? Like, so I think that's what's happening here. And like, you know, it's just, these two pieces of technology, parts of the tech world are both really, really cool. Let's see, and, you know, let's try our best to kind of fuse them both together so that we have something coherent. Yeah.
But is there a space for that? I mean, it's a bit of an asshole, but you all remember Ask Jamie?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
I'm too young for that. Well, what's Ask Jamie?
You were not in Singapore. Not that you were too young for it, okay? But Ask Jamie essentially is the stupid chatbot that was on all the government websites for a period of time. Essentially, it's the AI chatbot, you know, where you ask Jamie certain things. It's no different from ChatGPT in the function that it is, right? You ask Jamie something and then Jamie blurts out some answers for you, right? And it was such a flop. It was so horrible, right? I think that's why people are so amazed with ChatGPT, because the way the answers are being pulled out, you know, it's a lot more rigorous, right?
It's basically like Microsoft's.
Hey, you remember ICQ? Do you remember ICQ?
Yes.
Just want to check your age, huh?
Yeah, I remember the paperclip in Microsoft Word, lah. So that's the same thing, right?
Dude, I remember like IRC and Alamak Chat, dude. That's like how.
No, old I don't want to talk to you. It's like you're too old for me, right? Yeah, you're five, six years ahead, I think.
Yeah. This AI tech, aside from ChatGPT, there are really quite a lot of different, you know, so there are generative art and illustration tools. You know, there is an AI for like generating social media assets. You know, so you could literally type in that, like, you know, like I want 5 slides formatted for Instagram feed that feature a bald Asian guy with glasses.
Thank you. Thank you. Lovely.
And about, you know, like finance, you could add it in and then like it will generate something that looks cool. Yeah.
I don't know if you're aware, Mark, but now we have our stories on Instagram being read out by an AI Joe Biden.
Yes. Yeah.
Wait, seriously? On your IG?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. We should do something.
No, but yeah. I mean, we also do use a lot of other AI tools like in our work, like, you know, things to do with like, you know, transcribing our interviews and meetings and like all that stuff that just makes work easier. But okay, to bring it back to this conversation, ChatGPT says that, you know, its AI can be used for smart contract management, fraud detection, predictive analytics, mining optimization, and identity verification. So all these potentially very good use cases for the crypto space. But you know, there are several voices within the industry that are skeptical about this rush to using AI. Yeah.
In what sense? Like, why are people skeptical in that sense?
I mean, like for example, like we spoke to Cake DeFi co-founder, Yuzin. I mean, he said that the AI is too limited for blockchain tech. And then he gets a bit technical, saying that blockchains need to be deterministic, but AI is fuzzy in that you get a different answer each time you ask AI.
I mean, it's based on your prompts, right? Essentially, how you prompt it.
Yeah.
But you know what's the interesting part? The interesting part is even if you use it, right, you don't actually know how the prompt works, right? You don't know how this prompt is telling you what is behind, you know, like even a lot of the people that create this AI, right? I mean, time before AI is probably called machine learning, right, for a period of time. Mm-hmm. But anyway, even time before people that created, a lot of people that created this AI, they say that they don't even know, you know, what is the algorithm at the back. Right, because the whole idea is to create a set of parameters to train the AI such that it can create its own parameters to then give you the answers that are the best in class. Right, but because we won't have any clue and essentially the algorithm is ever changing because it's ever learning, it's always updating. So your prompts, right, it's like some people can just go and try an experiment, right? You ask the same question today and you try to ask the same question in the same format 3 months down, right? It may have a very different set of answers.
Yeah, because I mean, right. The AI, you know, depending on what has happened, really, it would have evolved as well.
Yeah.
But do you reckon this could also be a UI thing? Like, you know, like maybe there needs to be some sort of, you know, a better user experience where these there's some transparency about how, like, you know, like the machine is or the AI is actually like learning or
no, bro. It's not about that. The idea is so far the best in class ideas, okay, or the people that are in the space that I've read and some people I've casually talked to, they all say that they don't know how the AI ultimately creates these answers. Because all they are doing is to create a parameter to create the AI. Yeah, yeah, then the AI will create its own parameters to make the answers.
Okay.
Right. So even they don't know what is this black box that's happening, right? So which is I think what the guys are saying about deterministic and fuzzier, you know. So yeah, even the creators you know, don't realize what is inside.
And you know what, Reggie? That's actually a really great point. I don't want to kind of turn this final discussion into something a bit more ideological. But
you always do that, lah, bro.
don't you guys see this as a huge problem? Like, even if the creators don't even know, you know, like what is actually happening behind, right? That to me is a huge, it raises a huge ethical issue, because I think that it can definitely make work a lot more efficient. It can make, you know, if really they're able to apply that technology to some of the infrastructural issues at the moment with blockchain, you know, that would definitely speed things up, right? But I think that it is that part of being human, right, is being able to problem solve and then learning from that, and also being able to articulate and communicate, right? If this actually becomes the norm in about, you know, like 5 years or so, you know, we are going to lose a significant part of like our humanity here. You know, I don't think it's too extreme of a view here, right? I mean, if you think about, I don't ever need to kind of draft an email again. Right now, like, you know, like I used to grow up, like when we grew up, you know, we still were able to kind of write letters to each other, right? I don't even know how to do that anymore.
No, I don't. I don't write letters. Right? So I just want to make sure that we are a different group one. Just to be clear.
Yeah. Right. So we just went from like, okay, now we're at a point where like communication is very instant. You don't need to think too much, and then we can kind of like, you know, like post something online and bam, you got it done already. We're going to reach a point where like we don't even know how to do that, man. Like, because you don't need to, you just need to kind of like, you know, key in some prompts, it's done for you.
No. I think the idea here is a lot of people need to realize that when these prompts, they do something, they create something for you, they are really, I don't exactly know what's inside the AI, but I'm pretty damn sure there's some sort of a consensus within it, in a sense that which articles are the most ranked, you know, how many backlinks do they have, you know, what are the keywords that are the hottest, the most written, you know, and all that, right? Because there must be some sort of a measurement at the back for the AI to know that, okay, this is the best answer out there, right? So in other words, right, whatever that is shooting out at you are consensus, right? This is what people will call best in class. But if you really want to play the game, right, then actually you can stage it, right? You can stage a lot of articles and then you churn it over X period of time, and then it can actually shift the consensus. Right. So that's a different discussion, right? But if you are talking about like creative work, you know, actually creating new things and re-envisioning data sets, because data sets, they come to you, you can spin all sorts of stories from the same data sets, right? So if you are creating new things, it doesn't run against what these AI are doing. They are really just pulling data out to form a best-in-class answer. But best-in-class is ever-changing, right? Based on what is being put out there and how do you interpret and all that, right? So I think that's the difference. But do you guys think that this whole AI thing can actually work in Web3, or is there a space here for it, or like it's just like going to stay on its own for a while until like it's more developed, then we look at how to come back, you know, or what is happening?
To be frank, I'm really not qualified to kind of like answer that question. AI is a space where, you know, I don't have the subject matter expertise to weigh in on. I don't know about Tim, but yeah.
I mean, to answer your question, whether it's going to be useful for Web3, I mean, the crypto industry is so decentralized, right? And there's like information overload and fragmentation across platforms. So this is a use case for AI because, you know, information that was difficult for users to access and comprehend can now be packaged and delivered in an understandable form. So, I mean, I think there's a use case, but whether, you know, it is successful or it will be widely adopted in the future, yeah, I mean, I also can't say. However, there are many projects now that are experimenting with this, with all the VC money flowing to the space, of course. Yesterday, I received a press release that another AI platform called Kaito has just raised like $5 million. Not that much, but big names behind it, like Dragonfly, Sequoia, a few others, which wants to transform crypto search with ChatGPT. So it's like basically they want to help users browse Web3 easily. So this crypto search engine is already available on trial. And like right now, you can't, when you do searches, try to get information or whatever, you can't get stuff that's all available on Twitter, Discord, forums, on-chain dashboards, and things like that. So with all the VC money flowing to the space, there are several projects that are getting off the ground now, one of which I received a press release yesterday from another AI platform called Kaito. So they raised $5 million to transform crypto search using ChatGPT. And they got some big names behind it, like Dragonfly, Sequoia, a few others. Kaito wants to help users browse Web3 easily. Because like when you're searching for information online, especially crypto industry related stuff, you know, you get your information from Twitter, Discord, forums, on-chain dashboards, all that. Not easily accessible or available, especially to search engines. So, you know, this AI platform wants to help, help you get information from all these varied sources. So to go back to your question, is it too limited for Web3? It's still too early to say, but, you know, there is a use case because the crypto industry is so decentralized and there needs to be a way to pull all this disparate sources of information together. Nice.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Nice, nice. So yeah, I think at the end of the day, there still leaves more room for, you know, development and see how it goes, you know. But I think I love, yeah.
Let me just say this. I'm excited about this technology, but I also want it to fail in a way. I really do. I mean, my view, I just don't think it's a good thing for us. Yeah.
I know. And you know what's the most interesting thing? Actually, the most interesting thing about this AI, right, was when automation was built in for like white collar, like blue collar jobs, right? All the white collar people were like, yeah, this is great, lovely, good stuff. You know, we can increase margin, we can automate a lot of these things. But now that a lot of these automation and all these AI and all these things are coming in to suck up the white collar people's job, right? You know, the anger is there. They were like, how can you do this? It's not ethical, blah, blah, blah. Whatever rubbish.
Just creative work and stuff, you know. Like you don't think that kind of like trading can should actually be automated. I mean, like, you know, like I like having an AI to do that would be better than a human being.
Yeah, that's a different discussion. Algo trade has been around for a long time and it's very hard because the parameters are not fixed, it's dynamic, right? So that's a different discussion. Anyway, I'm more amazed by the amount of chatter now. Well, unethical, it's like, wow, you're so privileged. But anyway, that's a different discussion.
You know, I don't know. I don't know how you guys feel about this. Like, I'm all for it. You know, when I was a kid growing up, there was all this talk about how robots are gonna like change the world and then nobody will have to work. But then, like, the older I get, the more I work. Like, when will robots take over and I can just chill out?
Yeah. Actually, like, Tim just wants to chill.
And now we're in 2023, you know. We're supposed to be working a lot less than before. Like, especially for all these tools and all to help us.
But, that's annoying, right? Annoying. That's a different discussion.
I'm all for AI and like, please take over all our jobs. Like, I've had enough.
No, I think that's a very different discussion in the sense of who then owns the value created by the AI. Are we going to do it on a socialistic front? Right? Wow, we're going to go there anyway.
No,
it's
because
fine.
If you didn't actually create it, then it's not yours. I'm sorry. Like, you know, like there is no value that is generated from there. I think that is like the key thing here. But yeah, that's a great question, Reggie.
It's okay. We will nationalize AI. Okay. Anyway, okay. So yeah. I mean, that's what we need to do. Okay. So yeah. Take care, all. Thank you. Thanks for joining me this week. We'll see you next week. And next week, I think we have a friend on the show. So yeah, Boss Lee. I think I'm gonna get Boss Lee on. Do you know Boss Lee? Like, he has quite a big TikTok channel.
Yeah.
It's quite a big TikTok channel. So his name is Brian. I hate to call him Boss Lee. I mean, it's like, I hate to call people by their stage name. But anyway, we'll see you all next week and have a fun time. So take care, guys.
Bye.
Hey, Coconuts. So yes, I hope you enjoy this new show that we're building together with the team at Blockhead. And the goal is very clear, right? We're not here to shield any token or be a cheerleader for any project, but we feel that there's a lot of development that's going on in this space that we could cover and continue to be a little bit smarter as investors. I mean, eventually you tune in every week to a financial podcast network so that you can be smarter with your investments. And if so happen this is something that you're looking at, the crypto space, Web3, Metaverse, all these kind of stuff, then that is where we're trying to cover, but not from the angle of like, this is good, that is bad, but really trying to see it from like, what is happening, how is it developing, and I hope you find this useful and interesting, right? So if you want to continue to get more coverage around the crypto space, check out blockhead.co, and then we will see you next week.